And welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday, 7th of February, with me, Ian Welsh. Recently, I was lucky enough to speak with Amy Yoder, Chief Executive of Anuvia Plant Nutrients, a company developing new bio-based fertilisers for the agribusiness sector that are made from organic waste materials. We talked about why Anuvia's products improve soil health while boosting productivity. That's coming up, but first is the regular roundup of some sustainable business news. Is it good news when a worst-case scenario improves to be merely catastrophic? Well, that is one interpretation of a paper recently published in Nature, which argues that the climate change scenario that was based on a global economy largely dependent on coal, known to climate geeks as RCP 8.5, which predicted as much as 5 degrees Celsius warming this century, can now be discounted. This is because of a widespread switch to natural gas and increasingly renewables as primary energy sources. Peak coal was thought to be in 2013. The Nature paper says that while the growth in emissions is slowing, a realistic business-as-usual scenario is still a catastrophic 3 degrees rise. Some scientists are taking this improvement as a sign that more is achievable, including getting towards achieving a 2 degrees rise. But others warn that current thinking still does not sufficiently take into account feedback effects such as the release of greenhouse gases from thawing permafrost. Changing diet to mitigate climate change remains big news, of course. A new report produced for the True Animal Protein Price Coalition argues for so-called fair pricing for meat to be included in the upcoming European Green New Deal. The research investigated greenhouse gas emissions, air and water pollution, and biodiversity losses associated with livestock production, and concluded that a 25% increase in the cost of an average steak would be appropriate. This could reduce beef consumption by two-thirds, the report says. It also calls for significant hikes in the prices of pork and chicken products, though these are less than beef as their production impacts are lower. Overall, EU emissions would be cut by up to 120 million tonnes every year, with €32 billion raised annually from the levies. The potential collapse of the dairy sector is predicted by researchers at think tank Rethinks, who say that innovation in precision fermentation could produce protein at a price point that becomes competitive with milk-derived products. If precision fermented ingredients can replace just 3.3% of content, then the dairy industry, as currently established, would, Rethinks says, collapse. This is not through consumer behaviour change, but from the business-to-business market, where the giant food companies buy significant chunks of the global dairy production in the form of milk powders that could potentially be made cheaper in the future incorporating the fermented products. Finally this week, there was some seemingly good news from the US on human rights, with a potential $70 million federal government program to fight human trafficking, involving new White House-based officials. The Walk Free Foundation estimates there are 400,000 people trapped in modern slavery in the US. While on the face of it positive, some human rights groups, however, avoided a launch event for the program, arguing that the Trump administration's policies on asylum seekers and visas make it harder for trafficked victims to escape slavery. Our winter webinar series is underway. If you missed this week's discussion with Nestle, Mondelez International and Yum Brands about reducing climate impacts in agriculture, then you can find the recording published now on innovationforum.co.uk. Next week, on Tuesday the 11th of February, I'll be speaking with two senior people from apparel brand Patagonia about their approach to living wages. And on Thursday 13th, I'll be debating the future of ethical trade with L'Oreal, Intel and VF Corporation. Later in the month, on February 26th, Innovation Forum's Toby Webb will be joined by sustainability heads from Adidas, Hugo Boss, H&M and Puma to discuss how action on climate change will transform the apparel sector. Sign up for free using the links in this week's newsletter or via innovationforum.co.uk. And if anyone registered can't join live, then they will receive the audio recording in their inbox. Innovation Forum's 2020 conference programme is round the corner. On the 18th and 19th of March, we'll be back in London for the Ethical Trade and Human Rights Forum. Among the confirmed speakers are business experts from L'Oreal, Mondelez International, AB InBev, Total, Fairtrade and Freshfields. Our New York Ethical Trade and Human Rights event is on the 5th and 6th of May. If you attend, you will hear from senior representatives at Walmart, Microsoft, Intel, PepsiCo, Hilton, Tyson Foods and Timberland. And then on the 28th and 29th of April, we'll be in Amsterdam for the next in our Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference series. Among the experts joining us will be representatives of Primark, Hugo Boss, Tommy Hilfiger, CNA, Eileen Fisher, Sustainable Apparel Coalition and Conservation International. We'll be convening the 2020 Future of Food US Forum in Minneapolis on the 27th and 28th of May and hearing from the likes of Walmart, Danone, General Mills, Yum Brands, Kellogg and McCain. And joining us at the London Future of Food event on the 2nd and 3rd of June will be the key people from Nestle, Unilever, Korn, Sime Darby, IKEA, Oxfam and Tiger Brands. And discounts of £400 are available on passes if you register before close on the 7th of February. It's going to be a well-attended event and spaces are limited, so worth signing up now to guarantee your place. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke with Amy Yoder, Chief Executive of Anuvia Plant Nutrients, an agri-tech business based in the US that has some really exciting and innovative products that boost soil fertility and general health and can help the agri-sector cut potentially harmful chemical inputs. We're going to talk a little bit about your business and your products and what your products do. So why don't you start us off by giving us a brief outline of what your products do and why they have been developed?
Our products are plant nutrients, so a fertilizer product that have been developed for row crops, meaning large-scale agronomic crops, corn, canola or rapeseed as it may be known in Europe, wheat, cotton, and rice.
And what have they been developed to do?
They've been developed to help those plants grow in an agronomic situation, to increase yield, as well as to provide sustainability benefits, such as reducing greenhouse gases compared to conventional fertilizers, and also putting organic matter back into the soil to feed the microbes in the soil biome where the roots are.
How do they go about doing that?
They go about doing that because what we do is we actually take organic waste materials that are normally thrown away or put into a landfill. And these kind of waste materials can be food waste, it can be waste from agronomic processing like whey from a yogurt plant, or could be peanut hulls from a peanut processing plant, it could be manures from large-scale livestock operations. We take those kind of waste materials and in our patented process, we break them down into single-chain amino acids. We add additional nutrition to them. And then we granulate those products just like a normal fertilizer. So what the farmer will do is he'll take our products, he'll add it into his normal agronomic blend that he would do every spring and or fall, depending on the crop, and we replace the conventional nutrition. And with the organic piece that we utilize, what that does is that holds those nutrients in what we call the plant available form, meaning the plants can utilize those nutrients very efficiently. And they don't have to go through a chemical conversion process, which is how conventional nutrition works. And by not having to go through that chemical process, the nutrients stay in the soil zone, they don't volatilize and become greenhouse gas, and they don't leach and get into the water supply, as you may hear with phosphates and nitrates. So nutrients stay where the plant can utilize them, then allows the plants to use more nutrition because of less loss. It reduces the greenhouse gas component, it reduces the leaching, and then the organic matter also feeds the soil microbes around the soil zone.
What are then the specific benefits for farmers? You talked about some of them already.
The real driving benefits for farmers are, one, productivity. Because of this, with the more enhanced nutrition, more nutrition that's available to the plant, we've seen significant increases in yield very consistently. So that's important. Being able to produce more food on less land allows us to utilize land really made for farming, and we're not trying to expand into areas that really shouldn't be farmed. So that's a positive benefit. The second benefit is really being able to feed that soil. You know, soil is a regenerative. People don't think about it, but it's really made up of living organisms. Those soil microbes are what really regenerates and helps the soil stay healthy and helps create new soil. So what we do is we actually provide a food source for that, which is very beneficial to the soil. So that not only helps plant production again, but also when you think about it, allows agriculture to continue into perpetuity because you're continually reinvigorating that soil going forward. And that's important for us as a people. And lastly, the other piece to me that I think is very important from a farmer aspect, it's really a much more sustainable way to be able to produce a large-scale agriculture. Anytime that you can reduce greenhouse gas and we can benefit the environment as well as get the productivity that you're looking from a commercial perspective, I think that that's a very positive outcome.
We keep hearing that soil productivity is in an internal decline. Do you see your product as something that can help address that?
Yes, exactly. So soil productivity is in decline primarily because we've been utilizing that land. And if you think about how naturally soil is built, right? So I'm going to do a forest, make it very simple. Leaves fall from the trees. Those leaves break down. They're broken down by different microbial activity. Then when it's broken down into the smaller amino acids, the soil microbes eat those. The soil microbes then die. And that continually builds it up from a soil perspective. When you think about large-scale agriculture and you start looking at a field, what you'll notice after harvest is there's actually very little organic matter that's there. We just don't add the organic matter. It's just not there like it has been in the past. And then if you go back even earlier to really early agriculture, you used to put livestock manure on top of fields. Well, that doesn't happen quite as much anymore because we don't really have those kind of small farmers. And so what we actually do is we take that manure, it goes through our process, we actually break it down quicker than Mother Nature can and put it in that form so those microbes have a food source. And what that does is really it's two benefits. One, that manure is not being placed somewhere that it shouldn't be, i.e. in a landfill or some other way to be able to dispose of it. It's actually being put back on the land to grow the crops like it's meant to be. But also it happens quicker so that neighbors of the farmer don't have the odors that can occur when you are spreading manure and waiting for it to happen naturally.
So what about the impacts on other inputs then? I'm thinking about water, other fertilizers, other chemical inputs.
We're not broad-based enough fertilizer just because of the way the nutrition is built out that we would replace all conventional. The way that we focus on it here is we talk about it as the base. So it would be the base product that a farmer would utilize, and then they may have to, depending on the crop, add more nitrogen. If it's corn, they may have to add more phosphorus or another crop, maybe such as canola, than what we bring in. So we're base. What we do is we make a very positive impact in that we really reduce conventional fertility for fertilizer use. And by reducing that, that's really where you're seeing those benefits from an environmental impact in terms of reducing greenhouse gas, reducing leaching, and being able to feed the soil.
And I would imagine that if you have a situation where the soil structure is being continually improved, that's going to really help water use as well.
That's correct. The more you build that soil structure, the better off that is in terms of water utilization, drainage, and you are exactly correct.
Okay. So how do others in agricultural value chains benefit then here? How do you see the kind of benefits going through the agricultural value chains?
I think there's a couple areas. We talk about the benefit to the farmer and ultimately that benefits everybody. When you look at it, though, from agricultural production, what I mean there is really food production. I think there's a really significant benefit when you think about regenerative agriculture. We've been a society as of late that's been a bit of a use and throw away. And this is really more of a use and reuse. So if you're a peanut butter producer, for example, you're going to grow your peanuts on the farm. You're going to bring your peanuts in for processing. You're going to shell them. The peanut piece is going to go to peanut oil, peanut butter, variety of products. But then you have a shell. In the past, those have been basically put in a landfill, which is not good from an environmental perspective. We can utilize that agronomic waste, break it down, build our fertilizer, plant nutrients, put it back on those same peanut fields. If you think about it too in terms of livestock production, i.e. let's take hogs, growing pigs, you're going to feed them corn. They have a large amount of manure. Currently that's held in big silos. It's a big issue, especially in the United States and I believe in other areas of the world as well, what to do with that waste. We can take that waste, we break it down, we repurpose it into our plant nutrients. Those products go out to grow the corn that feeds the pigs. And so what you have is actually that continuous cycle of use and reuse. And I think that that's very important when you think about where we want to go as a society.
And I guess if you're also solving a problem with pig waste, which is leaching into water courses, I know that's an issue as well.
Correct.
Water contamination. So yes, another positive, I guess, from your processes. Which crops benefit most from your products then, and where?
We benefit all crops. We've done agricultural testing on corn or maize for your international listeners, soybeans, cotton, rice, canola or rapeseed, peas and lentils, sugar beets, as well as a variety of fruit crops and fruit and vegetable crops, i.e. tomatoes. We've focused, as we're a U.S. company today, we focus primarily on what I'm going to call the big crops like corn and cotton, rice and canola. And the reason is in the United States, corn is probably our biggest contributor in terms of greenhouse gas and nutrient leaching because it uses so much nitrogen. So being able to have our product on there, which has a slower release from a nutrient standpoint and a better utilization of nutrition, really can eliminate some of the issues that we've been seeing in those crops. We work on all crops, but our focus has really been on those big agronomic crops that are contributing to some of the issues that we see in society today.
Just in closing then, what's next? How are you developing your products?
We've moved past the startup stage. So we're actually launching a full-scale production facility in the U.S. probably in third quarter of 2020 this year so that we can be full-scale production and be able to compete effectively with conventional fertilizer. We're also actually working internationally with a number of partners and are actively searching for other partners in other parts of the world. So I see our next big push will be geographic expansion because the issues we're talking about are not just United States issues. They're real issues around the world. And because of the flexibility of our technology, being able to use a variety of different agronomic waste, for example, take the UK where all of your food waste is now being held, what do you do with that now that you have it held? It can only go out on the ground a certain time of the year, and then most of it's just getting held. So it ends up being an issue and a problem. We could take that food waste, break it down, make plant nutrition back out on the crop fields for the farmers, and it actually solves a variety of problems.
It sounds like you've got a lot of interesting solutions for some of the really big problems in agriculture, and look forward to hearing about how it all transpires. But for now, Amy from Anuvia Plant Nutrients, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian.
Don't forget to register now to save £400 to attend the Future of Food event in London this June. And remember that there is plenty of content available online at innovationforum.co.uk. Look out for more this week on the future for the cocoa sector and analysis on what due diligence means for business and human rights, as well as webinar highlights and all the usual podcasts and interviews. All available for free, of course, no paywalls at Innovation Forum. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and I'll be back next week.